This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
But right of first refusal makes perfect sense, but you nailed it. Sometimes, depending on the geographic distance, if mom's just going out for a couple hours in the evening, driving 2 hours to get to dad doesn't make a lot of sense. But when it comes to longer periods of time, like mom's going to Hawaii for a week or something like that, you know, dad should be the one to step in. And when you see people who can be consistent and reliable and calm, that's when it all can work well. But in so many of these cases, people just aren't able to do that.
Well, and if mom is going on dates, isn't that a little awkward to, you know, have dad come over and babysit while she's, you know, making out with the new guy outside the front door?
That would probably, you would have to have the kids go over to dad's house if there were that kind of thing.
What a narcissistic move that would be, though. You wanted right of first refusal. I got a date tonight. So you get the kids. Of course, he has the right to refuse, though, too, and say, you can go send him to mom or whatever. All these things, when in the hands of a manipulative individual, can be used wrong, can be used in very, very toxic ways. And unfortunately, I think a lot of people jump to that, and especially the right of first refusal thing when a parent, you know, for example, look, I'm not using Donna Adelson as a good example here, but let's say it's a healthy grandparent or something that they're going to send them to for let's say it's mom's week or something, and you know they had a vacation that was planned, they're going to go on a vacation, whatever it may be, and the kids are going to go spend that week with grandma. Because why not? Because nice, have a nice week with your grandparents if they're healthy people.
Yeah.
And then if dad wants to step in and go and say, or mom, whoever it may be, wants to step in and go, well, I had the first right. Okay, well, they're going to take the kids to do all these things. They want to, you know, enjoy a week with the kids or whatever it may be. What are they going to do with you? Nothing. No, you're going to sit in their room all week and do absolutely nothing. Dad and that sort of thing is not looking out for the child. Dad is just trying to be extremely rigid and follow the rules, or mom is following those rules simply to punish the other parent. But who's being punished more? The child.
The kid. Right. Yeah. And that's the thing about this is people consistently not being attuned enough to their kids to see what the kids need. And kids really begin to feel like, I don't matter here. Mm-hmm. My needs don't matter. And it's confusing to them.
And that's where a lot of the filing that we're going through is the direction that it is heading. Is it's the head of all of these issues that Dan was having with Wendy, stating she's not following this, she's not following that. And eventually courts aren't very happy with these sort of things when one parent is not participating in joint parenting, which they've been ordered to do. Another thing he pointed out was expert advice being ignored. This is a big thing. The education of your kids, the preschool director, Dr. Phelps, recommended consistency and even suggested that one of their kids take an extra year of kindergarten for developmental reasons, which is a normal thing. Mm-hmm. This happens all the time in preschool and kindergarten.
Yeah.
I can guarantee, like, just look around. You may not even know. There's probably people in your life right now who've done that you have no clue about because they don't even really remember. But this does
one of my sons. Yeah. Yes. One of my sons was young for kindergarten, mm-hmm. and they just said he's going to thrive if he does another year. If we move him ahead, he's going to not be as mature. And so I'm like, sure, let's make sure it's to his benefit. It's not about my ego.
That's a healthy thing to do. I did preschool for 2 years for that exact same reason too. And I'm an August birthday. So it's one of those where it falls like, well, you could be this year, but maybe you want to do this a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. And so we decided let's do an extra year of preschool. It was fun. I enjoyed every moment of it. But if you are not doing it for the interest of the children, and let's say you have some narcissistic tendencies like Donna and things of that nature, well, that might be looked at as a blight to you, an insult to you. How could your child, and this is not what the public is saying, but this is the self-talk that's going on in the mind of somebody like Donna, or maybe even Wendy, of, Oh, well, that's they're not smart enough. They're afraid that that's going to look negative on them, that the image that's being portrayed, they're repeating kindergarten. Adelson can't do that.
Right.
That's and when you start making your decisions based on that, you're not doing it for the kids.
100%. 100%. Yeah.
One of the other troubling details documented was that Dan had documented was his children repeating lines that they heard from Wendy's mom, from Donna. Things like, Grandma says, you're trying to take our sunshines away. It's not the kids' own words. That's them carrying the message. I mean, how damaging is that when children become a mouthpiece for the adult conflicts that are going on around them? And when they're using terms like that to the kids, it's not just, well, you know, this is not how this is going to work right now, because this is however you could word it 50 different ways, but you're taking my sunshines away.
It's the ultimate form of manipulation. And I am not a psychologist here, but I was a victim of this. Oh my goodness. This case just resonates with me entirely. My dad manipulated, all three of us kids against my mom, and his mom did very similar things, talking horribly about my mom and what my mom was doing to the family. And I see so many parallels. The only thing that was missing was the murder. So Siobhan, I'm excited to hear your take on this, because I'm sitting here in my 50s and I'm still, it's a dagger to the heart, because I'm hearing this and I'm thinking, yeah, been there, done that.
Mm-hmm.
It's painful. Mm-hmm.
It's horrible. And I have a similar experience. You know, if you've read my book, I met a man 10 years older than me in my fundamentalist church when I was 15. I married him at 16. By the way, kids, do not do this, right? Use me as an example of what not to do. Of course, grew out of that relationship and decided I didn't need a father, went into therapy in my early 20s. But by that time, I had three children. And he was still focused on Satan and constantly Bible reading, and not to negate that that can be fine for some people sometimes, but when it's cult-like, it can be very destructive. So staying in the marriage was simply untenable for me. I just couldn't do it. So I went through this process of trying to be collaborative and saying, look, we can co-parent, and all the stuff I was reading in college is kids can do fine if you work together and be collaborative and be calm and support the other. And he was furious. He was absolutely furious. How dare I? And he actually would tell the kids, mommy is going to hell. And you want to talk trauma on the kids. My daughter must have been about 6 years old, and she called me crying on the phone. Dad said, we have to pray for you because you're going to hell. 1 year for Christmas, I bought my son a skateboard, and it was a cool skateboard, and it had a dragon on it. I think he was about eight. And he called me up and said, Dad and Dad's new wife said that mom bought you a satanic skateboard.
Because
it had a dragon on it. And it was just, it made me sick to see this kind of stuff said to the kids. So, but now, you know, they're middle-aged adults. Who are they close to? They're close to me.
Yeah.
And they see their dad as nutty.
Had you gone out and murdered him at that moment in time, that wouldn't have worked out well. That's where taking a breath.
Yeah. I had to take lots of breaths. And eventually, because we started off, I agreed to joint custody, because that was at the time what we thought was the best thing for the kids. But when you have someone who tries to create alienation and says these incredibly toxic things, joint custody doesn't work. And so I eventually had to file for sole custody, which worked much better. Mm-hmm. And the kids now look back and they see, you know, dad was crazy and dad was out to get you. And this was horrible that we were put in the middle, and they can see that really clearly. So sometimes, as you said, Stacey, it takes a lot of years to unpack all of it and make sense of it.
But those scars stick around for an eternity.
Thank you.
You know, as healed as you may claim to be, and I don't mean you, I mean me,
So you should say, as killed as I claim to be, is what
I'm trying to put it in the third person, yeah. But I, you know, those scars are deep, and there will be moments where somebody will do something and it just hits you like, oh, wait a minute. They're not trying to manipulate me. They're trying to live their life. You know, not everything is a necessary trigger, but it's so ingrained in who you become because it happened to you as a child. Yeah. Those are your really formative years, and it's so hard to break out of some of that. So my heart goes out to these kids, what they've been put through, just so unfair. And that's why divorce needs to just separate the stuff and be done. This manipulation and back and forth and trying to damage another person is just not useful.
No, it's not a cage fight. Exactly. But I think a lot of people, you know, I mean, look at our world. I mean, look how people, they identify with that sort of thing to such extreme levels.
Yeah.
And then I think then everything in life becomes a cage fight, you know, figuratively.
But I will tell you, if it was a cage fight, my money would be on Stacey. I'm just saying.
Agree.
My money would be on Stacey.
I agree. I think
100%.
It's that jujitsu.
It is.
Her spunk and her jujitsu.
Well, I've been getting some private lessons lately, so I'm getting pretty good at it.
Birthdays were battlegrounds too in this. Dan said that they had agreed to hold joint birthday parties. Of course, Wendy backs out on that. There's a lot that's being painted in this document from Dan of essential isolation of the kids from Dan on very key points in their lives, on things that matter, on things that don't even matter. Just kind of across the board, I'm going to do everything I possibly can in my power to exclude you from these children's lives, except for when the court says you absolutely have to be involved. But even then, I'm going to find reasons and avenues to skirt that so you don't have to be. We were talking earlier, right, when you came on about the Wendy asked telling the kids to call her boyfriend daddy. Just if these allegations are all true, it really seems to point, especially Wendy, you know, backing out of excluding him from the kids' birthday parties. The kids wondering, where's dad? It really points to, I would say, you know, again, whose mind are we dealing with here? Is it Wendy's or is it mom's in terms of excluding dad from all of these things? Is Wendy truly the one that's saying, I don't want dad to be a part of these lives? Or is she following mom's orders as a foot soldier? And the people who are truly being traumatized here are the children, and Wendy's completely oblivious to it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Could go either way with that. It's just so hard to sort out. Donna's power over everyone, her dominance and control, has been a consistent theme. And it could just be that Wendy slides into that very naturally, or back in the day, she slid into that very naturally and came up with good excuses, you know, good reasons that she could rationalize for herself in order to do that.
Wendy, in the affidavit that we were talking about, Wendy listed jewelry, cars, and personal property at $0. There were many accounts that appeared to be moved or hidden in this process. What is going on here? I mean, everybody does try to protect themselves in that sort of a situation. But that's why there's discovery. You can only hide things so much. And especially if you're not going to hide them well, what the hell are you doing? I mean, is it just stupidity on the part of Wendy Adelson on some of this, of just not understanding, you know, what you need to do and that you're going to get caught in the cookie jar over here? Or is it something, you know, mom didn't get her hands on to, you know, veil well enough yet?
Yeah, it speaks of a lack of integrity, doesn't it? Which is a bad sign. But people do that a lot. And often, even when there aren't kids involved, they rationalize why that they're entitled to this, but it's lack of integrity. It's playing dirty. And we often in a divorce, we see the absolute worst in people, which is, you know, makes it all the harder for everybody.
And if true, it don't get much worse than this piece, the Holocaust ring. If, again, this is an allegation from the filing. Okay. This was allegedly a diamond ring from Dan Markell's family tied to Holocaust survival. I tried to dig into more of the meaning of it. Exactly. You know, who did it belong to? What's the full story? I couldn't find much other than it was called a Holocaust ring in the divorced proceedings. And according to the proceedings, the allegation is under oath, Wendy promised that if Dan's elderly uncle ever asked for it back, she'd return it. The uncle did ask. And according to Dan, she refused. That's the allegation. That's pretty freaking dark. Mm-hmm. The you're keeping it for what?
Mm-hmm. Just for spite. I mean, come on. That's just another pawn in the game.
The Holocaust. Right? I mean, that's like, I can't even like who would do that? I mean, even if you absolutely hate the person, I mean, it's from your lineage, your family that survived the Holocaust. And you're like, I'm going to keep this for spite over here.
Yeah. Whoa. Yeah, dominance and control again, exactly, and giving somebody the middle finger again. And that can feel really good to a very angry person to do things like that. But yeah, it's pathetic. It's pathetic. Lacks integrity. No inner sense of justice or what's right and wrong here. It's all about, look what I can get away with.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, you know, humans are going to go back to self-preservation. There's also allegations here in this that on the day of the divorce filing, she withdrew hundreds of thousands of dollars from their marital accounts without telling him. For him, it wasn't just some money. It was proof that she was setting the tone of unilateral control, basically, from day one. And that's what she appeared to be attempting to do. Who was steering the ship? Was it Wendy? Was it Mordana? I don't know the answer to that question, but obviously unilateral control was the goal, and Dan was ultimately going to get to a courtroom, and a judge was going to hear all of these things. He was going to hear all of it, and Dan dies the day that these filings were supposed to go into place. Coincidence?
Doesn't look like it.
No.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really doesn't look like it at all.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.